Welcome to Follow the Sound, the Halloween special.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Oh, God.
And along with me for this wonderful show is Jacob Crum.
I'm starting to regret this idea.
And Greg Harvey.
Greetings in my creepy voice.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Jake, you brought this on yourself.
I did.
You knew full well I would do something like that for my intro.
Have.
You can predict me very easily because I will do whatever I can to annoy you.
And you set me up and distracted me by making sure that I was combing through my notes so that this went off without a hitch. You devious bastard.
So, we're recording this, of course, on Halloween night. But you're probably not listening to this on Halloween night because I'm going to post it probably tomorrow. So if you're listening to this, we hope that you had a wonderful time out for Halloween. For those of you who still go out and do stuff for Halloween, I know a bunch of people did stuff over the weekend. Jake, I know you went to kind of like a giant Halloween party.
Oh, yes, I did.
In St. Louis here. And you dressed up as a what?
A silver fox.
A silver fox. So you were like dressed as a fox, but you were like silver.
Yeah.
And the face. And
yeah,
like,
the play on words, you get the pun.
Yes.
It's like a distinguished, like George Clooney type fox.
Yes.
Okay.
Except in your case, you were a literal silver fox.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
I got it.
I dig
so,
it.
Mm-hmm. I did not do any partying nor trick-or-treating mm-hmm. or anything of the sort.
You're
and in fact, I haven't done that for like a decade. So, mm-hmm. at least.
Now, here's
the thing. I haven't had trick-or-treaters in a decade.
I have never dressed in costume before in my life.
Oh, yeah?
That was the first time since, I mean, like, toddler
childhood,
age. When
yeah.
I couldn't even fight what I was wearing. And basically, toddlers are just always in costume
yeah.
anyway, right?
So, I seriously have not had to deal with trick-or-treaters,
mm-hmm.
like, since I was, like, 13 or so, when we moved to our new house. Our parents moved, my parents moved to a new house. And it was on this sort of weird back alley kind of, you know, the road. It's kind of creepy to like drive down. And anybody on the outside section of that street wouldn't send their kids down that way. So we never had trick-or-treaters all that time. Then I moved to St. Louis and I moved into a building where basically no kids exist and nobody does trick-or-treating in an apartment building.
Yeah.
So I never had to deal with them there. Now I'm in another apartment building. And I'm working tonight, so I don't know if Jessica had any trick-or-treaters. I highly doubt that she did, though. But either way, we had a little bit of candy just in case somebody happened mm-hmm. to swing on by.
Now, here's the thing, Brian. Is I love parties.
Yeah. You do like parties.
I love parties. And the more debased and debaucherous, the more I enjoy them. Which means I really like Halloween.
Yeah.
I don't like dressing up. But I did this year because I knew I was going to such a grand event
mm-hmm.
that it wouldn't be okay. Like, if I showed up, here's the thing, Greg. You ever show up to a Halloween party not in costume?
Yeah.
The same thing happens every year, right? You show up and everyone goes, where's your costume? Are you going to go put it on? Are you getting in the costume now? And you go, no, I'm here for the party. Can we have a fun party? And then everyone at the party removes a part of their costume to make an ad hoc costume for you on the spot. And next thing you know, you've got Wonder Woman bangles on and a pirate hat.
Yeah, you're Wonder Pirate.
Exactly. That is not what I wanted to happen this year.
Do you want to know what the most common costume that I saw on Facebook? Just because of some of the groups that I belong to and stuff, the most common theme or character that they played?
I know what my guess is.
What you got?
I saw an ridiculously large amount of Bob Ross
really
costumes this year.
Now,
like a lot of Bob Ross costumes.
I walked up to a Bob Ross thinking it was a friend of mine, and it was not.
It was the other Bob Ross at the party.
So the most common one that I actually saw, it is music related, is Blurry Face from 21 Pilots.
Really?
Not kidding. Aww. With the beanie and mm-hmm. the black shirt and the shorts with the leggings and like all that. Like, I swear to the good Lord that there was like 1,500 girls on Facebook that dressed up as Blurry Face.
It's actually a pretty good idea, though.
I saw a lot of Hugh Hefners.
course you did.
A lot of Hugh Hefners. And every single one of them I walked up to and I got super excited. I went, yes, I love L. Ron Hubbard. L. Ron Hubbard, yes.
That's awesome.
That was my thing.
Oh, my God.
That was my thing for the night.
I wish I could have seen that.
Nobody got it.
Oh, I would have busted up laughing mm-hmm. either way. That is because
they
hilarious.
Were all wearing captain's hats, you know?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it was great.
All right, so let's go ahead and get into this lovely episode of
spooky episode.
Halloween stuff.
I'm not gonna play up the spooktacular.
I'll be the cliche guy.
So, Jake,
yes,
you've set this one up.
Yes, I did.
And you've given us a list of songs that are not necessarily Halloween songs, but just sort of songs that make you think of mm-hmm. Halloween.
Well, here's the thing, right?
The spooky feel.
So Friday, I was at work. And the van I was driving broke down. So I sat and listened.
Should we lower the lights and get a flashlight?
No. I sat and listened to KDHX, local radio station.
Yes, yes.
And everyone was doing a Halloween show.
And you heard a scratching on the roof of your car.
No. What I actually heard. Thank you for dimming the lights,
thanks,
Greg.
Thank you, Greg, for dimming the lights.
Yeah, we needed that.
You're welcome.
Actually, it does feel much better in here now. I got to do this more often. I normally turn the lights way up.
Feels a little more spooky.
This is a little bit more.
But everyone
personal.
Basically had like the same Halloween show. They're like, yes. Hey, here's these like three songs everyone hears all every Halloween. And then here's some songs I think fit in with that. And then here's like something that's kind of a spooky, weird theme. And I wanted to do a Halloween show, but well, we can't play all of the music. Like,
yes.
We can't play an entire song.
Yes.
So instead, I picked a handful of songs that have at least an interesting tidbit about them that we can talk.
Yes.
About.
So you want to get this sucker started?
Let's do that. And
let's
because you wouldn't let me just, like, lead into it, our headliner is Bobby Boris Pickett's Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having.
Uh-huh. So that's the classic Monster Mash song that everyone hears constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And like we have talked about before, the Monster Mash is not actually that song.
Oh, yeah, true.
The Monster Mash is another song and dance that he saw the monsters doing in the graveyard, but we don't know what that song is. We only know the song about the song, much like tribute to the greatest song in the world.
Oh, yeah.
By Tenacious D. So, Jake.
Yes.
Enlighten us as to the intricacies of the man who wrote this song and beloved by millions.
Yes.
I think to put it simply, Do any of you listening really know anything about this song? Because I don't. I mean, I know it's the Monster Mash, but like, Jake, what the heck is up with this song?
Okay, so this song has been re-recorded, redone, re-released under various titles. The song's always called the Monster Mash. However, who recorded it? Sometimes it's Bobby Pickett, sometimes it's Mr. Pickett, sometimes it's Bobby Boris Pickett. Sometimes it's Bobby Boris Pickett and the Graveyard Kickers, right? Well, who's the man Bobby Pickett? Well, Bobby Pickett was a guy whose father owned a nightclub. And he was also in theater. He had friends that were in music. Why? Because his dad owned a nightclub, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one day he was sitting down with a friend, and I'm sure he was trying to work off a hangover, because that's when your dad owns a nightclub, you always have a hangover, right?
My dad owns a nightclub.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And his friend just happened to be songwriter Leonard Capazzisi. I never heard of this guy before, but he actually did some work in like big band stuff. Anyhow, so they were sitting down and they're like, hey, let's write a song that can compete with like the Mashed Potato and the Twist. So Halloween was coming up and Bobby was just like, let's do the Monster Mash. What if monsters are dancing? And they hammered out the lyrics to this song as you hear it, first take. Bobby Pickett in an interview said that they never changed any of the lyrics from the very first draft.
I don't see what would need to be changed.
So anyhow, who comes walking into the nightclub one night when Bobby Pickett decides that he's going to play this at his Halloween ball? Right? They're having an event. Dick Clark.
Mm.
What does Dick Clark do? He puts him on American Bandstand doing this song.
Mm.
And it becomes like the best-selling like seasonal release of 1962.
Wow.
So now you've got this guy, Bobby Pickett, who's not a professional songwriter, right? He just kind of happened into this with a friend of his. And ever since then, he was chasing the dragon. The next year, he followed it up with The Monster Swim. Right?
The Monster Swim.
It was the exact same song with different lyrics. I'm not kidding you. And then he just kept following it up with these like all kinds of other different versions of it. Like the B-side on The Monster Swim was The Werewolf Watusi, which actually got more airplay. We have like Me and My Mummy, The Monster Mash Party, which I have not heard.
It's really stretching it.
However, a song I have heard on Dr. Demento's show, Monster Mash Jam.
Hmm.
All in all, this guy wrote 38 follow-ups to the Monster Mash. All monster-themed, all basically kind of the same melody.
They were all spin-offs.
Yeah, Monster's Holiday. My personal favorite, Monster's Minuet.
Yeah.
In G minor?
Yeah. In G minor. A nice Baroque follow-up. However, the real true highlight is Monster's Holiday, which is the B-side on a Chipmunks album.
Wow.
Interesting.
So there you go.
That ties us in pretty much with the
to
next song.
To our very next song, done by David Seville. I was slightly hesitant to suggest this be in the show, because someone is going to suggest that it's culturally insensitive. And I read a very good article today about depictions of voodoo in media that I happen to agree with, that voodoo is a recognized religion in the Caribbean, and it should be given the exact same kind of respect that you would give to any other religion. The catch is that I give almost 0% respect to every religion. So, well, let's hear Witch Doctor.
I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said that... I told the witch doctor you didn't love me true. I told the witch doctor you didn't love me nice. And then the witch doctor he gave me this advice. He said that ooh ee ooh ah ah ting tang walla walla bing bang. Ooh ee ooh ah ah ting tang walla walla bang bang. Ooh ee ooh ah ah ting tang walla walla bing bang. Ooh ee ooh ah ah ting tang walla walla bang bang. You've been keeping love from me just like you were a miser, and I'll admit I wasn't very smart. So I went out and found myself a guy that's so much wiser, and he taught me the way to win your heart. My friend, the witch doctor, he taught me what to say.
Sorry, the line about the miser.
Yeah,
that's the one that
yeah.
cracks me up the most.
It's a pretty good rhyme. So that was Ross Bagdasarian, whose stage name is David Seville.
Yes.
Went on. That was
an Armenian fellow, as I have heard numerous times from my friend John Okabenjian.
So he put that song out in 1958. And I think it was another 6 years before the Chipmunks like had their first thing.
Something like that, yeah.
But that's actually a recording technique that he sort of pioneered and developed himself.
Yes, which is actually kind of funny, and I'm trying to figure out a little bit more how they did it, because they normally like recorded songs slower and then like sped them up, and so I'd really like to have seen how they sort of matched up the timing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was it just that they recorded it, like, you know, this was at 30 beats per minute, and they recorded it at, you know, an increment of 30. So it's like, okay, they just sped it up that much, and then...
Here's what I can tell you about that. So Ross, Bagdar Sarian, was actually a musical prodigy.
Yes.
Right? Really accomplished, really good musician, and could keep incredible time in his head. And it was a combination of, you know, recording something very slow... and then speeding it up a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
But then he also actually had to sing out of time from what they from where they were recording.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's not exactly like, okay, we're going to play this at 30 beats per second and then bump it up to 60 beats a second. No. He's recording it at this like half speed, but he's performing it at a different tempo.
Yeah, I knew that much. Yeah, okay. I knew that it was because it was at a slow speed and then he sped it up to, that's why I was saying, like, did he record it at 30 beats a minute and then speed it up, you know, because if you do it 60, then it's twice the speed.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the instruments are recorded at 60 or 120, I guess, you know, because if you're speeding it up so much, you'd have to make it like however many semitones higher.
Yeah,
so.
No, the song, when he's recording the vocals to the song,
yes,
he's doing it at a complete, not a half tempo or a half time or a third time. He's doing it at a completely different tempo than what the song has done.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Okay, and then when they speed it up, it then matches.
That's exactly what I just said.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay, then.
I was just saying it from a technical standpoint as opposed to from a drummer standpoint.
Yes.
In that if you record something like speed wise, if your one is, you know, is at 30 beats a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, and then it's so it's like with this, he would have been, you know, recording, you know, ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. You like that.
Yes.
And then you speed it up to 120 beats a minute, then you've got the high pitch at 120 beats, which then the rest of the band records at. So I wondered if they did it with some type of a click, you know, like to basically make everything fit together.
Well,
I'm wondering the math behind it, the count behind
it. See, if I was going to record it, I wouldn't have even thought about it that much because you would just do the slow version, speed it up to the pitch, whatever, and then once you hear that and you hear it going ooh ee ooh ah, then I would just say okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, and just record the rest of the song around the sped up vocals.
Here, this is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
To match the key of the song as written, he could only speed up the vocal parts so much because his own register couldn't go low enough. So when he recorded the vocals for the song, It's not a multiple of two times. It's a fractional multiple.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense? So it's not like I'm going to record this like everything's in 4/4 time. So it's not like he's changing the timing of it.
Yeah, he's not changing the time signature.
Right.
He's changing the actual tempo of the song.
Right, but it's not just as simple as like I record it this way and then I put it at double speed, like. He had to...
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying is that, okay, you see, scientifically speaking, if you, like I said, we'll go back to the 30 beats a minute. If you record something at 30 beats a minute and then speed it up to 60,
yes,
the octave will be double.
Yes.
So okay, it'll be the same key in a different octave.
Yes.
Because it's twice as fast.
Right.
And so that's why if you then double it again to 120... then that means you've got a person that starts out at a normal human tone, then sounding like a chipmunk.
Right.
You've got to record it really slow, so that way when you speed it up,
you
then get to the right tempo. So that's why it's like there's a lot of math involved in getting this right.
I think the point that we are trying to make here, folks...
We got into a weird tangent here, okay?
The point we're trying to make here is that he pioneered something...
This song is not worth this discussion. That is really not.
Yeah, and it's... The point is that it wasn't something easy to do, but he figured it out.
This is what we do. We really break down music. We really break it down.
I would also like to add, too, that the song itself, pretty darn hectic, wouldn't you say? I mean, it's pretty fast.
You know what's funny is that it actually, the song it reminds me of is Super Mario World.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah,
I never thought of that, but you're right.
But you're right. It's got that weird oboe part going over the top of it that seems like it was ripped out of a different song.
Well, yeah, the song just sounds hectic, too, because it's got horns and stuff playing, but yet it's such a fast pace. Yeah, interesting.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next song, which is a total classic that everyone should be able to recognize. It goes a little something like this. That's a pretty good place to fade out that song. Everybody knows the rest of this song anyway. There you go. Ghostbusters.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
So,
good old...
Who did that one?
It was, what, Ray Parker Jr.
That is correct.
Anyone? Ghostbusters, for me, has the weirdest cameo in a movie. Ron Jeremy is standing in a crowd in one of the scenes filmed outside in New York.
Okay.
And he's confirmed this. I've seen interviews that they've done with him where they're just like, Ron Jeremy, is this you standing in the background? He goes, actually, yeah, it is. He goes, I was just there. I happened to be there. It's like, it wasn't like I was invited to do a cameo or some crazy thing like that. He goes, I just happened to be there at the time. And I ended up as an extra in the background. And I'm Ron Jeremy, weirdest cameo.
Wow. So, back to the song.
Yes, like, back to the song. Ray Parker Jr. So, who is Ray Parker Jr.?
Well,
he's a guy.
Do we have any Ray Parker Jr. fans in the house?
I do not. I'm not, like, I only know this song. That's all I know.
Really?
Yeah. I know this song, and I know a really good remix of this song.
Okay. Have you ever heard The Other Woman?
Mm-hmm.
No? That was his big sort of, like, debut solo hit.
You know,
was that
something weird?
And yes.
I mean, I've confirmed this. Originally, when they were wanting somebody to do like a theme song for Ghostbusters, do you know who they actually asked? Lindsey Buckingham.
I was
going
to get to that. Yeah. Lindsey. Apparently, he had done work with Harold Ramis on like one of the National Lampoon's movies or something.
And so they asked him if he wanted to do it. And apparently, what he did was okay, but they didn't think that it fit necessarily. So at least that's what I hear. That's the story.
Probably wasn't like upbeat enough or something. I don't know.
It was probably weirdly artistic for Lindsay. So, because he likes to do that. He's just like, oh, you want something that's upbeat and happy, kind of like Holiday Road that I did for all the National Lampoons? Yeah, something like that. Okay. And then he sends them like something that's slow and artistic.
Mm. Well, all right. So Ray Parker Jr.'s kind of known more as a writer.
Yes.
He did a lot of work with like Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Uh-huh.
And Chaka Khan, and surprisingly, Boss Skaggs.
Weird.
Yeah. But anyhow, so he did this Ghostbusters song, and another one of those soundtracks that was like the biggest thing that year.
I can tell you that this was the song I heard while walking out of my building this morning, because they played it over the speakers. So there you go.
So there you go.
I know is that this is actually a really good song, music-wise. It's actually really cool how it sort of builds when he's doing that I ain't afraid of no ghost part. And then it kicks up in the harmony over top of it.
Yeah.
Musically speaking, it's a really good song. And the like the drums and everything, even though it's pretty straightforward, I still love those, that classic 80s electronic do-do-do-do-do, like kind of sound. Yeah.
Nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah.
Lost to Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You.
Of course it did, because that's a great song.
It's a really good song.
So. I do love like that big 80s sound you were talking about, Brian.
Yeah.
Because like this is Ghostbusters, but it definitely just slaps you in the face, and it's got such an eerie intro, but then the rest of the song is so upbeat. Like,
yes, yes.
And
perfect.
It's awesome, too, because like these are creepy Halloween songs, but they're not, they weren't made for Halloween, but they work so well.
Yes, yes.
Love it.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next one, unless you got
next,
more to add.
No, next song, this is the Donovan song, right?
Yes.
What's the title of the song?
Season of the Witch.
This is Season of the Witch. It comes from the Donovan tribute album, and the band doing it is?
Astronautilus.
Astronautilus.
Creepy.
Yeah.
That's good, man. I like that.
When
I've always liked that song, but man, that's good.
First question. Yes.
Go for it.
When did this song come out?
Okay, so this came off of the Donovan tribute album called Gazing with Tranquility, and it came out in 2012, 15?
Oh,
I'll get
okay.
an answer for you.
Well,
but go ahead.
But that's what I was wondering. So it's, because it's, I mean... I've never heard this song before, personally, but it's a trap beat, so I could tell that it had to have been current because of
drum. Yes, it was originally an older song that was released in...
Like, 66.
66, yeah.
Okay.
Like, it's a much older song. It's just that this happened to be redone in a different version. Now, that version is actually the one that I've heard used on TV shows. Whenever it's like trying to be creepy and like that kind of a thing. So but I've heard that version before and I like that version a lot.
Yeah. Donovan is kind of like this, psychedelic rocker that came out in the '60s. Really kind of graduated into his own in like the late '60s, early '70s, and then just got weird from there. He's the type of artist that you hear referenced more than you hear his music.
Yeah.
Just so happens that this song was kind of his one big radio hit. And his vocals on that version is a whole lot more like Joe Cocker kind of, you know.
Yeah.
But this comes off of Gazing with Tranquility, which is from 2015. And I just love this version of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. I like that a lot. That one definitely belongs in sort of a Halloween playlist. Because that's just good and creepy.
Season of the Witch. Mildly danceable.
So.
Yeah.
Like, you could actually kind of groove to that one a bit more.
I mean, that song kind of reminded me of, like, some 21 Pilots, you know? And
A little bit, yeah. I could see that.
Like, I feel like we could almost put something like Heathens into this list if we had more songs that we were going down.
Yeah, I could see it. If you were going to create sort of a Halloween playlist for a night, I'd probably want to throw Heathens on there.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's got sort of a good groove to it, and it's kind of dark. It's got those, you know... the tritones.
Yeah,
you know, the which tritones. Are the dark tritones.
Oh, yes.
If anybody in music who actually plays music knows about the tritones, because it's considered the devil's music.
Yeah, and the reason they consider it that, too, is because it's supposed
it's
to give
dark
you...
dark and ominous.
It's supposed to give you an uneasy feeling.
It does give you an uneasy feeling. And it That's never, why it works in metal yeah. so nicely.
And it never resolves itself.
Yes.
So it always mm-hmm. makes you feel like there should have been something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's creepy.
Speaking of feeling, I wish there was something else.
Ooh, yes.
Let's go on to the next one.
Oh, but okay, but...
Oh, wait.
You got to check out the Donovan Tribute album. It's got Mixed Up Kids, Sharon Van Etten, and the Flaming Lips on it.
Oh, nice.
So if you're looking to, if this, like, you know, tickled your ear on checking out Donovan, start there. But this next song comes from one of my favorite acts of all time, Screamin' Jay Hawkins. And I love him because he's over the top and commits to everything.
Yes, he does.
This is his debut song, I Put a Spell on You.
Put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Stop the things you do. What's up?
So, you know, the reason that ties this all together as it being a creepy song is because I can visualize Mr. Oogie Boogie Man from The Nightmare Before Christmas singing that song. Because it sounds like him.
It does.
And it's creepy.
I love Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
And I love his sense for theatrics. Because if you ever watch him do that live, right?
Mm-hmm.
He holds out that second line. However long he feels.
Yeah.
The band just plays.
Mm-hmm. Is it the Because You're Mine?
Yeah.
Ooh.
He absolutely stares down the crowd until everyone gets uncomfortable, and then he goes, Wah-ha! It's amazing. That guy was such a performer.
Yeah.
Love Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Wow.
Not to mention, I mean, like, obviously it's in his name. He can scream.
Oh, yeah.
He can just, like, let it out and just, like, from the depths of his soul.
There are very few singers that can do both that operatic, like, overcharged vibrato and just that sheer power at the same time. He's one of them. Another one, believe it or not, is Tom Jones.
Yeah. Tom Jones can do that kind of stuff, definitely. I would say on the other side of it, like the person who can do like the really good gravelly kind of stuff, but not the operatic side of it, would be Howlin' Wolf.
Yeah.
Who is, of course, on like the same record label with Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Adele as well, though. Adele kind of has that, too.
If we're just throwing out names here, when I was looking up a list mm-hmm. of creepy songs and creepy artists, they several different sources said Tom Waits.
Oh,
I could see that too. Tom Waits is definitely in that vein with Howlin' Wolf and Screamin' Jay Hawkins. So,
yeah, when we did that album review, a few of those songs were creepy, especially with like the metal clanking.
Yeah,
just oof.
That's
yeah, we
good.
We skipped the one where he just talks about this weird ass house the entire time. What's he building in there?
That was the song that they were talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we skipped that because there's music wise, there's no real beat. It's just kind of random clangs and noises.
Yeah.
A real performance piece. But yeah, Yeah, it's great.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on to possibly the least Halloween-esque song on this list. But I like that it's there because it's definitely a song that will be played in the Halloween season.
You would put it on a Halloween playlist.
Yes, even though nobody really knows what it's about except for the people who actually like looked into the song. But like newer kids and stuff, you know, they would have no idea what the song was legitimately about. But if you know what it's about, then you can snicker along with the rest of us as we listen to Werewolves of London.
Through the streets of Soho in the rain, he was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. Kitchen door.
So, Werewolves of London.
You better not let him in.
Of course, by Warren Zevon.
Little old lady got mutilated lace last night.
Like I said, the song, of course, most people would hear it and be like, oh, this song's about werewolves. The song's not really about werewolves. That's,
It's about Werewolves of London, hey!
It's actually more so about the Wall Street banker type in London, those people who are like wolves and just devour everyone else around them.
Yeah, like, he could have called it like Snakes of London. It would have been the same concept.
But he had the ah-woo, which just sounds cool whenever he does it.
My favorite part in that song that I've never understood is the one part where he just finishes a line and then he goes like, Do you know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Where it's just, I don't know, I always wondered like if there was another verse there that got cut off, but I don't think so.
Like, it was just okay. Like, so, Warren Z. He's kind of always been a singer, a little bit like Eddie Vedder, where they just use noise, or they're just trying to hit a note.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really matter what they're saying; they're literally just sheer singing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like him so much.
Yeah, I know one of them just. To kind of keep on the creepy vein, I think the only picture I can ever imagine of Warren, well, there is like one headshot that I know, but the other one is him sitting at his piano holding his gun.
Yeah.
That photo. Creepy.
Kind of creepy. Picture. So, next song coming up.
This is the interesting one you put on the list.
Yes.
Because I don't know anything about this one, actually. I've not listened to it,
mm-hmm.
other than I clicked on it just to make sure that the audio worked before putting it on the list here to play.
Is this one of those songs that as soon as we hear it, I'm going to know it, or is it
still
Okay.
You might recognize it, but this song is kind of, and we'll just play it right after this and then talk about it afterwards.
Okay.
But.
So I'm starting about a minute into this song.
Yeah, somewhere between a minute and 90 seconds.
All right, so here we go. I got it right here.
Yeah, this song is a little bit of a Mandela effect, but go ahead and play it.
Okay.
Watch my fade-in skills. Thank you.
Okay, so that is the Danse Macabre, which was written in 1872. It is based on...
Then we could have played the whole thing. That's all I'm...
I was going to say, that's definitely a fair use song.
But, I mean, we're not...
Yes. Can I say...
Go ahead.
I really enjoyed that.
Yes.
Because you know me, I like classical music. But besides the name...
Yes.
What else does it tie into?
Okay. Have you ever seen The Skeleton Dance by Walt Disney?
Yes.
Okay, so The Skeleton Dance by Walt Disney was sort of the follow-up to Steamboat Willie, came out a year later.
Yeah.
Was commercially more successful, possibly because in 1929 there were twice as many movie theaters as there was in 1928, you know?
Yeah.
But anyhow, a lot of people miscredit the music in The Skeleton Dance as this piece.
Oh, okay.
But it's not.
Oh.
The Skeleton Dance in that song is actually a foxtrot changed to a minor key, which is the same notes at a different tempo, as almost as this, is that little hook that we went out on.
And you want to know what else is weird, too, is I wasn't thinking The Skeleton Dance, but the whole time I was thinking that sounded like the music you would hear as you went through, like, Disney's Haunted Mansion.
Yes. Yes.
To me, it had a very Harry Potter-esque sound.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, late 19th century French.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Exactly.
So the Danse Macabre is like an artistic tradition of like death allegories in French art. And that's kind of what inspired this piece. I like it because this is like the last, what's the word I'm looking for? The grandiose dying of symphonies without horns.
Oh, okay.
Right. Like, after this, you start to get brass, and everyone starts writing music for brass because it's the new thing.
Yeah.
And this right here is where I really see is, like, the end of, like, 200 years of classical tradition.
Yeah, I could see that. But anyway. Yeah. No, I dig it.
Thank you so much for indulging me, gentlemen.
I like that. That's good, though. It's completely different. I mean, that's one of the first classical songs we've ever played on the show, so I'm happy with
and
that.
And classical music can definitely be creepy, and so I'm just kind of glad that we got this in the list, because it's not like a pop Halloween song, you know?
Yeah.
But this next one is.
Now, this one...
This needs no introduction.
I mean, because we all know this one. Absolutely. I know we all know this one. So let's see if the crowd knows this one. Here it goes.
So what do you think, folks? Did you know that one?
So that was Ghost Town.
Ghost Town.
By The Specials.
The Specials.
Now, I remember this song from long ago, back in the glory days of when I would listen to ska music all the time.
You knew this one from when it was actually a hit?
I know, because at least I don't think so. I knew this one because it was on a compilation album. And that's where it was played on. And I was like, because I remember listening to it, and then I fell asleep, and then this song came on, and I woke up, and I was like, this is awesome.
It is cool. Personally, I found this one definitely to be an acquired taste.
Really? Because, I've always loved this one.
I mean, it's supposed to be kind of off-putting, but like in a catchy way, you know? I mean, it does exactly what it should, which is it makes you feel kind of uncomfortable, especially with those la, 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 la.
I think this is the first song by The Specials I heard that I knew was by The Specials. Because I probably heard someone else do Maggie's Farm.
Yeah.
But...
Bob Dylan, you mean?
I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. So, I'm sorry. I probably heard The Specials do Maggie's Farm.
Mm.
I'm sure I heard that. And a lot of ska bands have done it since then.
Yeah, the first special song I ever heard was Little Bitch.
Really?
That's like I always thought that was like one of their biggest hits, in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
Is that weird?
This is the special song I think of whenever I think of The Specials.
I think a lot of people are with you.
Because this was my first introduction to them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are with you on that one.
Yeah. I've always liked it, and I would definitely put this on my playlist.
But, man, what a great use of, like, the organ there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so just...
You know what I honestly love is the bass in the background, because he's doing that boo doo 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 doo, like, just hammering certain notes. Like, just really, really well.
That bass line, I think, is what really kind of holds the song together, even.
Yeah. And it's, that weird little, the organ part that, like, that part, I love that part. That's such a good song.
It's a really good example of a song that fits exactly in its genre, but it's still so different from everything else in its genre.
Yeah.
Because this is a 100% a reggae song.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Without question. And yet it's so different from any very other reggae song you hear.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Let's go ahead and move
unlike
on.
The next song,
yes.
Which is exactly like every song from this band you've ever heard.
And it goes a little something like this.
Under the octopus where the steamboats, ancient goblins and wild lords come at the grand line. Innocent, the smell of death is all around. And at night when the cold wind blows, no one cares, nobody knows. I don't wanna be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life again.
So that, of course, was the song Pet Cemetery.
I don't want to be buried.
By the Ramones.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, it's not fast enough to sound like every other one of their songs.
That's true.
I don't want to hear any flack from Ramones fans out there.
Man, I sing Ramones songs all the time because it pops up and it sticks in your head. I can't tell you how many times I've just been sitting there and then all of a sudden you're just like, 24 hours ago, I want to be sedated.
And then after that, you sing another six Ramones songs and you're still only 6 minutes into your own concert. But...
Hey.
Oh. So I pulled this one off of the their remixed version of this album.
Oh.
And I don't want to hear, like, the remastered version. I don't want to hear any flack from, like, Ramones fans saying, the remastered version sucks. It kills all the bass lines. This is far superior version of the song.
It's about the song anyways.
Anyhow.
And besides, it's our pick, so screw you.
Alienate the listeners. Let's go.
So we are down to our very last song.
Yes, but man, is it a good one.
It is such a great song. Do you want to say anything going into this, or do you just want to hit him with
the line? Here's my question.
Yes.
Are we going to chat at all after this song, or do we want to end on this song?
No. We're going to chat afterwards, because I always got to do my outro.
I was going to say, because I got things I have to say.
So, here's the deal. This is a song you've heard before. I know. You've heard this song before. You may not have known what it was called. You may not have known the actual lyrics, but you know that sound. Because they play it on every creepy TV show and in a lot of different movies. And it's just one of these songs that pops up and you instantly recognize it from the second the first note is played. Oh. And it sounds like this. That is one of those songs that I will be able to listen to for the rest of my life.
I'll be honest when I say I don't think I've ever heard that before.
Yes, you have.
From what?
I guarantee you heard this before.
But
guaranteed.
I mean, if you say so.
It has been used in so many different things that it's just all over the place. Who? That sound, that bell ringing, I mean, like, it's been used in so many TV shows. Which is funny because I heard about it because of a TV show, not because of a soundtrack, but because of songs that inspired the writers of a certain TV show.
Hmm.
And that TV show was The X-Files.
Huh.
The classic, spooky, alien, weird sci-fi show that dominated the 90s.
So who was that?
That was Nick Cave and the Bad Seed with the song Red Right Hand.
Red Right Hand.
So that song appears on the album that inspired like some stuff on The X-Files. But none of those songs were actually used in The X-Files. And so the album was called Songs in the Key of X. Now, Nick Cave, of course, released it on his own albums and stuff like that. But it was just a compilation album that The X-Files released called Songs in the Key of X. And that was the first time I ever heard it, and I loved it. From that, the first time I heard it until just now, I love that song because it gives such great atmosphere, and it's like you can sort of like see everything in your mind, like what he's talking about. He's like, you know, when he's talking about a tall, handsome man with a dusty black coat and a red right hand, you kind of imagine like this guy. Like a freaking Stephen King novel or something, you know, where he's just going crazy and stalking people. You know?
I get it.
Jake, do you agree?
I like the song.
There you go. See, I remember that, like, my brother even, like, this was kind of like a weird theme song for him while playing video games. Even to the point of when playing GoldenEye, he and his partner would shoot each other in the hand in the right hand so they could have a red right hand.
Okay.
And their character had like a trench coat. So.
Wow.
I will tell you this. When I was in Seattle and I was at the Pop History Museum or whatever, they have a giant screen set up there. I walk in and they play some other song and stuff, and I'm walking through, and then all of a sudden I hear that dong, the bell hit, and I stopped and was just like, because they played the music video for that song. And if you watch the music video for it, it's creepy. And it gets creepier the longer the song goes on. It's one of these things that's just, it's such a good song for me. I love it to death.
I think we had a pretty good list. And I like, too, that it wasn't it was all creepy. Because, we had that Witch Doctor in there and Monster Mash.
Yeah, some of them are fun.
This was, a fun, kind of mixed playlist.
It was basically Follow the Sounds Halloween playlist.
Yeah, Halloween on shuffle.
What would we do if we were going to put together Halloween songs? This is what we would do. But we also gave people some background into the songs, which is good. I like that, too. And we gave people a breakdown of different things. Yeah, we went a little long in trying to figure out how in the world Witch Doctor was recorded. Or pretty much any Alvin and the Chipmunks song. But that's just what we do here. We go off on tangents.
Yeah.
But we bring it back around to the music.
So, first off, Jake, do you have anything to add about this song?
About this song? No, I think we summed it up.
Okay.
Although Nick Cave and the Bad Seed is kind of a weird band anyway.
They are very strange.
Yeah.
Their music is all weird, so.
Yeah.
Well,
Nick Cave's a weird dude in general.
Australian.
So I felt like this episode really gave me some inspiration to kind of think more about the subject. So I was wondering, can I elaborate on a few songs that kind of have come to mind over the course of this
podcast?
Sure.
Go ahead. Why not? Yeah.
Well, okay. So I kind of go in a couple different directions here. First off, I don't think we can talk about Halloween music and creepy themed music without acknowledging a band that based almost their entire discography around the subject. That, of course, is the Misfits. But the reason I bring them up is because specifically, they have songs like Die, 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 My Darling, right? Spooky. They also have Skulls. The lines, hack the heads off little girls and put them on my wall. I want your skull. Pretty spooky. And then, of course, to put it... How do I say this? To put it extremely bluntly, they have Halloween, the song, and Halloween 2, the song. So I feel like the Misfits need to be added into our creepy list.
See, okay, with Halloween 2, you got on my bad side that's upset with the Misfits for writing a sequel to Halloween.
I mean, I think the first Halloween song is the one that I listen to.
Yeah.
But I will acknowledge that. There's two. Okay. How about this one? I don't know if you thought about this one. My Name is Mud by Primus.
Okay.
It's about murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Halloween is kind of the romanticism of our fascination with death.
Okay.
I don't know if it's necessary.
You don't like that pick there.
I guess I'm going for... the classical horror. I'm going for Phantasm, and you're jumping straight to slasher flicks.
I feel ya. Okay. I feel ya. But the Misfits, though, do fit.
Yeah, fair.
Because
yes,
they're
absolutely
a whole
yes.
persona.
You know, Skulls? Mm. Didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
And that's a really good Halloween song that I don't think ever gets played. I always hear Halloween.
Yeah.
And sometimes Halloween, too.
Okay. Well, so I won't... I'll steer away from Primus.
Okay.
And for that same reason, I will steer away from the Eminem stuff, I was thinking, because that's still more the slasher. Because I thought Stan is creepy, but not in a Halloween way. And then Kim is creepy because he's, murdering her on a track. Yeah. But, so I think my last suggestion, though, is going to blow your mind.
Okay.
Creepiest song for me... In the whole gosh darn world, this song freaks me the freak out. The theme to Summer Place. You guys know that one?
No.
Brian?
I'm going to have to look this
you
up.
You might have to Google this one. And I will explain to you. Should I explain first, or do you want to hear it first?
Well, because let me find it.
As soon as you hear it, you will know exactly what song I'm talking about here. But let me just preface it by saying that the freakiest movie I have ever seen in my life, the movie that truly scared the hell out of me as a child, was Stephen King's three-part series, Rose Red.
Okay. Okay.
And this song is featured in that film.
I'm not finding it.
And it has scared me. You can't find Theme to Summer Place?
No.
On Google?
No, let me look at Theme to Summer Place. The only thing I'm getting is the Percy Faith version of a song, and it doesn't look very creepy.
Oh, it's not creepy, but it is creepy. Here, just play it. Let me see if it's that. Let me see if it's. Yeah, this is it.
Oh.
Rose Red ruined this song for me.
Well, there you go.
You recognize it, though, right?
Oh, I mean, obviously, everybody knows that song.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that song seriously just freaked me out.
You know what song kind of got ruined for me? And it was such a happy little song. And it even the first time I ever heard it, it was in Back to the Future, was Sandman. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum. So I heard it in another show where it was done really creepily and dark. And it was like, no. No. This song has now been ruined. It was like, Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah, it's like the song from a friggin' serial killer, like as he's sitting there.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
Okay.
Even just something as simple as just la 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 la.
Yeah. It's kind of like Avengers Age of Ultron, when he starts quoting, he's like, I've got no strings on me. And then it's like he could have basically said any lines from any friggin' Disney song, movie, and it would have sounded incredibly creepy coming from that voice. So
mm-hmm. This song was used in a Charlton Heston movie called The Omega Man. And it was used in a scene where Charlton Heston is firing a machine gun into a building, like a high-rise building.
Okay.
And that I think is the first time I've heard, or first time in a major motion picture, that a big band ballad was used sarcastically.
Which song is this?
Or ironically. This one right here, Theme to Summer Place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's in The Omega Man, and I was trying to place, what movie did I see this? And I couldn't get the scene right.
Yeah. So, see, you have your version of where it's creepy, and I have Rose Red, which ruined the song for me, but, like, it's upbeat, but it's so creepy. I'd also like to give a shout-out to the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, it's always a good one.
Yep.
What song to pick at that point?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question, and for some reason, I can't get my head out off of Science Fiction Double Feature.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Probably because me first thing gave me that.
Well, yeah, but like, and it's not even like the creepiest song from the show.
I would say there's not many creepy songs in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
But I disagree. Anything that has Tim Curry in it is always creepy.
Well, I'm just saying, like, musically speaking, there's nothing really creepy.
Because, like, Time Warp is upbeat, Hot Patootie's upbeat. Yeah. Science Fiction Double Feet.
Sweet Transvestite.
Yeah.
Is, you know, like an upbeat rock song. Like, there's no real song in there that's like a creepy kind of song.
But yet,
slower songs that are in there are like, you know, like There's a Light. Like, that's not a creepy song at all.
Yeah.
But yet, the movie fits.
Movie fits, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, Sweet Transvestite, the intro to it, a little bit.
I see you met my.
That's what I'm thinking too. Yeah.
Hand boom,
boom. Yeah.
Ooh. I love that number, by the way.
Of course you do.
Yeah. Can I tell you about the first time I saw a Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Sure.
okay, a friend of mine says, hey, I'm going to go see Rocky Horror Picture Show. And I don't, I've been 14, 15, something mm-hmm. like that. Never seen it. I'm like, what's that? It's like, oh my God, you don't know what it is? It's an event. It's a spectacular. You go there to watch a movie, but you do things, and everyone dresses in costume. And I can't figure out what costume I'm going to wear. I'm like, okay. He's like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to watch this movie, and then I'm going to go watch the movie. Like, you're going to have a party to watch the movie to then go watch the movie. He goes, yes. Do you want to come to the party? Of course I'll come to the party. I come to the party, and he's like, look, I don't have a costume this year, but I'm going to start planning for next year. I just don't know what I'm going to wear. I'm like, well, let's watch the movie, and we'll figure it out. So Tim Curry comes out, and I go, hey, this guy's costume looks really simple. It's just, you know, a little bit. He's like a vampire. He's got a little makeup and a cape. And he's like, well, it's complicated. What do you mean it's complicated? Well, you'll see.
Yes, you will.
And like 45 seconds later, you know, Tim Curry and his bustier and, mm-hmm. and his thigh highs. And I go, okay, well, I guess I could see how that would be complicated.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're not into that.
It's a lot easier to go to like, go as Brad or Janet, especially yeah. when they're just in their underwear.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty classic. So.
Is that it? Any more honorable mentions we got to throw in here?
I mean, yes. Yes.
What do you got?
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Oh, okay.
The Monster Mac.
Oh, nice.
Sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. I also want to say when we were playing Dance Macabre, I should have mentioned what orchestra did that recording.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it was the National Philharmonic Orchestra.
There you go.
So there you go.
I yeah. dig it.
Thank you, gentlemen, for indulging me on this evening.
That's where I throw in storm noises.
No. Yeah. No, that's Greg's deal, the Foley and the ambiance.
One of these days we got to do like a fully produced thing like that. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it'd be fun, but it would require foresight on our part.
Yeah, which we never do.
Right, which is our...
That's not true. We do foresight. We just do it the day before as opposed to the week before or, you know, further along. But, you know, we're trying to work on that one. We're trying to get it. Yeah, because, you know, had I really planned for this, it's like, or had we planned for it a week ago, then, you know, I probably would have tried to do a bit more here. But, you know, sorry, folks. I'm lazy and I do things last minute. It's just what I do. All right, so... Once again, this has been Follow the Sound, the Halloween special. And I have been your host, Brian Kroc. Along with me has, of course, been Ghoul number one, Greg Harvey. And, of course, has been my trusty manservant, Jacob Crumb.
What if the breath that kindled those grim fires awakened? Should blow them into sevenfold rage and plunge us into flames, or from above should intermittent vengeance arm again his red right hand to plague us.
Remember, if you hear it, run as fast as you can.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.